This is part two of Michael Patrick Flanagan Smith reading an excerpt from the Book of Lou.
There were times his father forced him to make strange promises. "Promise me that if you die, you ain't gonna tell God about the pistons in the Trachtner motor," he said one night. "That don't make no sense," the boy protested. "Promise me." They were sitting over dinner and the lights were out except for candles on the table. They were eating tuna fish sandwiches with no tomatoes or mayonnaise, lettuce or nothing, just tuna fish straight out of the can and put on pieces of burn-up toast. Hunter had dragged a dead groundhog onto the porch, an offering for the man and his son. But the front door was open even though it was cold outside, and the smell of dead groundhog filled the house. It made it hard to eat. "Promise me you won't tell him," the father commanded. "Okay," the boy said, "I promise." The old man had all sorts of ideas about God. "The Holy Ghost has an asshole the size of the Great Grand Canyon," he once said. "Dad, you ever seen the Great Grand Canyon?" "No." "As large as the asshole of the Holy Ghost," the man confided with great solemnity. Llewellyn reached his father in the hole in the ground. The old man stopped. "You keep digging. I'm heading inside." He handed the shovel to the boy, looked down to the dog, turned and headed back to the house. Llewellyn looked down to the dog. He thought about the baling twine he used to tie the animal to the fence and he rubbed his wrists. He then turned and watched his father walk away. He noticed the tension in the old man's back, the tightness between the shoulder blades, the shoulders, arms, those big hands. He thought about a story he'd read on knights and damsels and castles, and a dragon who fell in love with a little girl. He remembered the time his father bound his arms and legs with baling twine and tied him to that fence post, just a few posts down from where the dog was now. He felt anger in him. His stomach, his chest, small arms, small hands. He spat. It disappeared, most of it. "Let's play a game," the old man had said. "What game?" "What you play with that Larson boy?" "Cowboys and Indians?" "Let's play that." "I don't want to play that with you." "Why not? You're my dad. Why you want to play it?" "We never play anything." "You're my dad. We ain't supposed to play." This anguished the old man. Rejected by his own blood, he moved in close to the boy, his breath heating his son's face, wetting it. "My father never played me." "You count yourself lucky." "You call yourself lucky." The boy knew the price of fear. He did not look away from his father's face. "Okay." "Okay what?" "Just okay." The boy knew the price of pride. He did not raise his voice. "Call yourself lucky." "What?" "Call yourself lucky." The boy was silent, but for a moment. "I'm lucky. That's right." The boy knew the protectorate of obedience, but perhaps he did not know it well enough. He told his father he was going to play sheriff. The old man disagreed, refused to play the Indian. They argued. It grew heated. "Tommy Larson always gets to play sheriff just because he's older," he said. "I just want a shot at being the good guy for a change." There was a pause, and the old man relented, much to his son's surprise. The boy felt himself stand straighter, a small victory perhaps. It accounted for more than he was used to. The old man bent forward again. "Well, I guess I caught you," he told his son. "What?" "Guess I caught you if I'm Indian." "What do you mean?" "What's a sheriff doing hanging out with an Indian? If you're sheriff and you're hanging out with Indian, you must be caught." "I don't know." "I do." The old man led the boy across the field by his wrist, and then bound the wrists of his son with the same baling twine the boy later used to tie his dog. He pulled the twine tight around Llewellyn's wrists, so the ropes cut grooves into the soft flesh of his arms. He tied him low to the fence, forcing the boy to sit. He began to tie his feet. "Come on, Dad," the boy pleaded. "Please." But the old man had resigned himself to the binding of this boy as if the work were a burden to him. Another chore. "We're playing a game, Lou. How are you ever going to learn anything unless you play by the rules?" The boy had no answer. He set his jaw and struggled against his father. He heard his own mouth scream like it belonged to someone else. The old man shook his head with sorrow, disappointment. This boy carrying on so. He paused, cleared his throat, bent over the boy with hands on knees and studied him. Looked at him like a mechanic looks at a motor. A good mechanic. Llewellyn listened to his own screams, his face bright red, eyes streaming with tears. He looked like a fish just caught, flopping around in the dirt, no arms or legs. The man removed his handkerchief, a red tattered thing from the back pocket of his work jeans, and stuffed it into his son's mouth. "I wish you'd have just quieted." The father walked away. He could taste old man's sweat, the dirty fabric of the handkerchief, tangy, bitter. Llewellyn did not feel like a sheriff. This did not feel like any game ever played. Eventually, his tears ran out. He struggled against the ropes and stopped. The sun went down. It grew cool. He struggled against the twine against the fence post. He stopped. He lay on his back, breathed through his nose. He turned his head to the side, opened his mouth wide he could. The fabric filled with saliva. He pushed his tongue forward until he managed to spit it out. The handkerchief sat there in the dirt. He looked at it. He did not scream. He lay on his back, breathed through his mouth. He struggled against the fence post and stopped. He then tried to chew through his bindings. The twine had a dry, chalky taste. His lips grew swollen and bloodied. Strands of fabric stuck between his teeth and caused his mouth, a raw, red hole, to itch on the inside. He swallowed blood. He tasted rope. He could not free himself. It grew dark and it grew cold. He lay there, thought about his mother's gelding buried somewhere close. At first, the thought was a comfort, but soon his mind wandered, his thoughts grew fantastic. Animals moved in the darkness of the wood behind him. Squirrels, finches, frogs, a deer, spiders, and crickets. He tried to picture the gelding from the photo in the kitchen, but his thoughts turned to the time he had come across a swollen body of a goat laying dead behind the feed barn. He pictured worms by the riverbank. The ghosts of animals began to gather. Specters, monsters, demons. He imagined his mother there, too, buried next to her horse. Was she sleeping quietly? Was she dreaming? Would she comfort him? Or would she rise from a hole in the ground, her skin barely hanging off the pale white of her bones, her eyes gone, her lips gone, all comfort and love gone out of her, all sweetness and softness gone out of her, taken from her by the earth itself, by the heart of the gelding, by the memory of the angry man to whom she'd been bound? Would she see the old man buried in the boy, in his shape and his eyes? Would she recognize the tattoo that branded his skeleton? He heard strange voices in the wind whisper spells, incantations, moans, and hexes. The boy called for his dog, and she appeared almost immediately. Sniffed around him, whined. For a moment, he thought the dog might free him like a dog in a television show. He imagined the two of them fleeing the old man, following the creek to the river and the river to the ocean where they would build a boat and sail across the sea. But Hunter did not do that. She whined and circled and sniffed him. She licked his wrists, his face. She nuzzled up next to the boy, curled her body into his, and warmed him. The dog was more a comfort than his dead mother. This was a hard lesson he learned. He also learned the limits of his bladder when he couldn't reach an arm around to free his pecker and peed his pants. Hunter licked his jeans. Eventually, the old man returned with a knife. He was disappointed. The stars had moved across the length of sky. The moon had reached its height and begun to bend down. It was closer to dawn than dusk. The man looked impassively at the pathetic figure of his shivering, pea-stained boy and spat in disgust. Kicking the dog away, he bent down to the boy, pushed the knife quickly between his son's wrists, the dull side of the blade scraping the boy's arms, but he dared not cry out as the man sliced through the rough twine, binding, in one powerful thrust. He applied the same unceremonious treatment to the boy's bound legs, then turned and walked off without a word. In a final insult, he whistled at Hunter as he strode back to the house, and the shepherd mutt followed. The boy stood up like an old man. He felt blood returning to hands and refilling fingers. He clenched, unclenched his fists, rotated ankles. He stretched his legs and massaged his wrists, following after the dog, following his father across the field and into the house. A few days later, the old man seemed to come out of his mood. The horror of his actions flashed across his face one morning, serving Cheerios to himself. He dropped the bowl, spilling milk across the wooden kitchen table, and stumbled out of the room, up the crooked stairwell, and into the darkened bedroom devoid of decoration or care. He sat on the solitary double bed, indented on one side only, and wept. His massive shoulders shaking, his hands trembling, snot running down his nose and spittle hanging from his mouth. He unburdened himself of whatever broken soul was inside him, a shuddering, convulsing thing in the shape of man. When he collected himself, he took the boy to a fast food restaurant, bought him 2 cheeseburgers, french fries, a chocolate milkshake. He sat there across from his son, face stuttering between an embarrassed half-smile and a guilty frown, skittishly taking in the boy, the cheeseburgers. The old man never said a word about what he had done, never apologized. He watched his son eat in silence, and Llewellyn somehow understood it. He knew it in a way that only a boy who has taken a good beating could know. After lunch, they went back to work. Llewellyn was digging the hole in the ground as these events replayed themselves in his head. He thought about the dragon and the story with the princess. The dragon loved her, but the little girl considered the creature a vile thing. Her suitor, a knight, vowed to kill the monster and set off in search of it on a quest. But when the knight faced the fire-breathing monster, he proved to be a coward. He ran. The dragon, knowing that he himself could never have the little girl, wanting more than anything else for her to be happy, out of pity or sadness or foolishness, offered his life to the coward. The knight took it, removing the head of the dragon from the body of the monster and presenting it to the little girl. It grew hotter as the day grew, and the earth was drying out the way it does. The ground got crunchy. Llewellyn glanced down towards Hunter. The dog whined on cue at the look, tail set to wagging, eyes imploring. Llewellyn ignored her and continued working. He kept at it for some time. The back of his neck blushed to a burn, and more than a single blister fixed and broke on his hands. The hole in the ground was big enough now to lay in. The boy's mouth dried out, and the dog was whining, but just as he prepared to break, walk back inside, grab a glass of water to drink on the linoleum floor of the kitchen, the old man appeared at the back of the house with a gun. Llewellyn looked up at his father. He did not stop digging. The old man was even filthier than he had appeared in the morning. What could he be doing, the boy wondered. His face was like a potato, washed out like a photo sat too long in the sun. He exited the back door of the farmhouse, shotgun slung over his shoulder, crossed the pine needle floor of the backyard and moved to the gate. He unhitched the gate with no trouble this time, walked through, hitched it again behind him. The boy kept digging. His father walked through the field. A sudden, strong breeze came with him, building slowly, bending the slender pine branches behind the house, prostrating long leaves of wheat. The old man held his hat to his head. The boy turned his face to the wind. It teared his eyes, cooled sweat off his face, combed his hair back, and settled quickly and quietly as if it had never come. Old man kept walking. Boy kept digging. Each shovelful added to each shovelful. A molehill next to a grave. Don't be a damn fool, Llewellyn told himself. His father stood before him, stopped. The old man did not speak until the boy stopped, looked up at him. Put the shovel down, he said. Llewellyn tossed the shovel to the side. How tall you figure you are? What? How tall are you? I'm 5'1". Huh. The man and boy stood facing each other. The sun reflected off the gun's barrel and the boy squinted. How big you figure that hole is? The man asked. It ain't that big. No? No. It ain't that big. You figure you could lie down in it? No. No? It ain't that big. It ain't big enough for you to lie in it? No. How you know? I can tell. How? I've been digging it, haven't I? His father sighed a weary sigh. He removed his hat, looked out across the field, over at the dog, then down toward the lower paddock where he could see furthest. It looked like he was searching for something specific, but his eyes wouldn't settle. He paused, cradled a wide, furrowed forehead in a large, calloused hand. The other hand gripped tightly to the stock of the gun. He took the gun off his shoulder and held it in his hands, cradling it like a man would a child. Llewellyn noted the dried blood that adorned the man's knuckles. The man spoke. Well, here I am. It's not the blood of the Savior, but his hands too is all that matters. This is really hard. The boy was still standing in the hole in the ground, looking up at the man. He was not allowing himself to think certain things that perhaps he should have considered. Things he would have considered, had the man before him been anyone other than his very own father. If someone were to see the two from a distance, that person would probably assume the conversation was about the shotgun. A person looking at the two figures from a distance would have maybe thought the man was interested in impressing his son, that he wanted to teach him something that he himself found valuable. Perhaps this assessment would even be correct. The old man looked past Llewellyn. He fidgeted with the shotgun a moment, and then walked past him, almost through him. The boy did not follow his father with his eyes. He remained where he was, staring at the back of the farmhouse. He sank slowly down onto his bottom. He put a long strand of wheat up from the ground, stuck it in his mouth, and sucked it contemplatively, watching a trio of white butterflies clumsily float across the field. He thought about the prince and the story with the little girl, because when the knight returned to the castle, he presented the monster's head to the princess. She was delighted. She agreed to marry him. Then, taking the dragon's head into her arms, the girl looked into the diamond eyes of the creature's skull, and in those eyes she saw only beauty. She fell in love with the enchanted creature. She looked into the eyes of the knight, and what she saw was cowardice, pride, ignorance bending to evil. She married him anyway. Llewellyn tried to make sense of the story. He removed the piece of wheat from his mouth and watched the butterflies until they disappeared. He heard a whimper. A shot rang out, and the boy leapt to his feet and turned to face his father. The old man stood by the fence post, just at the forest edge. Hunter, still tied to the fence, was dead, bloodied at his feet. The man knelt down slowly and ran a large hand over the shiny gray-black coat of the dog just once. Then he stood, turned back toward his son, and began a measured walk back to the house. He passed the boy, standing in the dog's grave, his face contorted in rage and fear and injustice, and he did not say a word to him or make notice of him in his passing. The man walked back to the fence, unhitched it, walked through it, and strutting across the pine needle floor of the backyard, walked up and disappeared into the house.